What if I can't hold out on this thing, Lord? See, I don't wanna disappoint you, my Lord, again, so deliver me from these thoughts in my head, Lord.
Deliver me from the valley,
deliver me from the valley,
Lord.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of Bear It All. Here at Bear It All, our mission is to empower you to live a life of purpose and step into your power. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so. You can reach us through Twitter. Twitter handle is @RSBearItAll. Facebook is facebook.com/3BearItAll. And our email address is BearItAll3@Hotmail.com. I am your host, Dr. Raquel Stewart, and I want to thank all of our supporters for your continued support, for your continued prayers. We truly, truly do appreciate it, and we need it. If you are new to Bear It All, I want to welcome you, so sit back, relax, and get ready to bear it all. Now, tonight we've got a great show with a special guest, and we're going to be talking about the strengths of single parenthood. If I sound a little nasal, it's because I am. I guess I have allergies. It's not a cold. Don't really know what's going on. But before I bring on our guest for the evening, I want to just cover some quick little hot topics. I like to keep you guys abreast of what's going on. And, of course, you guys, the first topic I always discuss is the race, the presidency race. And as you know, they were just in NYC. They were just in New York. And the winners coming out of New York are not really a big surprise, I don't think, to anyone, is was Trump and Clinton. We need to, I always say this to you every week, and it's so important that no matter what your feelings are on the election, and if you are not interested in the election or any of the candidates, you still need to know what's going on. You still want to be aware. We don't live under a rock. At the end of the day, whoever is in office is someone that we need to pray for, as always. We need to pray for our people that are in a position of power. And also, you know, they'll be making some changes. So what we're used to now, we now have to get used to something else. So you kind of want to pay attention. Am I telling you to sit down and watch CNN all day, every day? That's not what I'm saying to you. But be aware of what's going on, especially with this this election, as we draw closer to the time. And I encourage you to get out there and vote. You know, a lot of people sit back and say, well, my vote doesn't matter, it doesn't count, so why bother? It does matter, and it does count. You have the freedom to vote. Take the opportunity and have your voice be heard, okay? So that's, I'm just suggesting that you guys take the opportunity. Go vote. Let your voice be heard. You never know. Your vote may be the one deciding factor to sway the entire election. I'm just saying, get out there and vote. Be aware of what our candidates are standing for so that you can make an informed decision when you get to the polls, okay? another thing that's going on in our hot topics is, yay, I'm so excited, the Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew will announce plans to add Harriet Tubman to the $20 bill. Woohoo! That's the applause that's taking place. It's going to be awesome to have a woman back on our money. We haven't had a woman on our bills in many, 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 many years. And I think it's a great thing, and I'm so looking forward to getting my first $20 bill with Ms. Harriet Tubman, and I am saving and framing that. Okay, so I think that's fantastic, and I love it, and I'm excited to see the first ones come off the press. Another hot topic that I found really interesting and I want to discuss is a pot-dealing suburban mom gets off with community service. Apparently, this mother, she's from Scarsdale, and she admitted to running a $3 million pot ring, and she got basically a slap on the wrist on Tuesday after cooperating, of course, with the feds against her former drug-dealing cohorts. So basically, she decided, let me save my own self. I'm going to snitch. I'm going to sell them out, and she got a slap on the wrist because she got off with community service. She was busted, and her name is Andrea Sanderlin, and she was busted in 2013 for growing nearly 3,000 marijuana plants inside of a Queens grow house. That's where they grow the marijuana. It's called a grow house. 3,000 marijuana plants, and she's a mom. Be interesting to see if she's a single mom. She needs to be on this call tonight and learn that is not a strength. I understand you are trying to take care of your family. You need to understand that your kids need you, though. Like, suppose you went to jail, what would happen? So she really, if anybody out there, you know her, get her on this call tonight. It'll be interesting. Anyway, so those are my hot topics. Harriet Tubman, fantastic. Get involved in knowing what's going on with this, the presidential race, and this mom busted for pot. That's absolutely insane. 3,000 marijuana plants. When was she doing this? When her kids were at school? As I said, if anybody out there knows Andrea Sanderlin, get her on the phone and let her listen to this call so that she can understand that's not a strength. If she's a single parent, even if she's not, that's still not a strength. So tonight we've got a great guest. Dr. Allison Busker Cohen is the chair of the Department of Psychology and an associate professor at Delaware Valley University in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. She holds a doctorate in human development with a specialization in developmental sciences from the University of Maryland. always fascinated, Cohen, I need to get some water, has been researching the social lives of children and adolescents for several years. She is interested in how peer and family relationships impact adjustment, particularly during the significant transitions. She also has become interested in studying teaching and learning in higher education. She's an advocate of learner-centered education, in which the focus is on the process and how both students and teachers contribute to the learning environment. At Delaware Valley University, she proudly serves on several committees and is active in student organizations. Her work has been published in peer-reviewed journals and advanced textbooks and presented at academic conferences around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you Dr. Allison Busker Cohen. Hi, Dr. Cohen.
Hi, how are you?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a guest on your show.
Oh, we're super excited to have you. I don't know if you were on when I was talking about, when I was going over the hot topics and that mom who got busted for growing 3,000 marijuana plants.
Yes, I did hear about that.
What do you think about that? Isn't that interesting? Great way to segue into the strengths of single parenthood.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Families certainly do all kinds of things to make ends meet, but I would support parents acting as models for their children and advocating for a legal way to earn a living.
Absolutely. Dr. Cohen is real polite. I will tell you guys, stop the madness. That is not the way to show your kids how to make money. That's a quick way to show your kids how to end up in jail. That's not what we're about. We've got more jails than schools. That's a problem. That's also a topic for another show. And a discussion to have with our next or incoming president. They need to be aware of that. Let's get rid of some of these. Let's get some more schools going on. But Dr. Cohen, I'm so honored to have you here. We've had a few people super interested in hearing about this, and I guess that's because when most people think of a single parent, first of all, they think of a mom, they think of a woman, and they also think, oh, well, the man must have left her. So I want to jump right on in here, and I want you to tell us, one, why is it that the first person they think of as a single parent is the woman? And then why is there this negative stigma that's associated with single parenthood?
Yeah, that's a terrific question. I think it's really important when we consider single parents and single parenthood that we realize that encompasses a huge variety of people. So people might identify themselves as single parents because they have a partner who's serving in the military, perhaps, or perhaps because of divorce, or because of the death of a spouse, or perhaps there was never another partner involved. So there can be a whole variety of reasons that people identify themselves as, tend to go to this very traditional view of a single mother. Oftentimes we think of someone on welfare, someone who really isn't coping well with life, and certainly that does capture a piece of the picture, but it doesn't begin to give us the full story.
Absolutely. Now, why is it that we automatically think that single parents, or primarily single mothers, and we'll get to single dads because they actually do exist, people. Why do we often think of them as being on public assistance and being down and out? I mean, where did that stigma come from associated with single parenthood?
You know, I think whenever we think of some kind of stereotype or cliche, there's often a little teeny tiny grain of truth to it. And certainly if we go back 30 years, 50 years in our history, partially because of the way laws and social structures were set up, if a woman was raising children on her own, then oftentimes it was very difficult for her to earn a living. And oftentimes laws really didn't protect children, and so the other parent may not have been required to pay child support, or no one was enforcing it. So there's a whole variety of ways that can happen. But I think it's really important to challenge those stereotypes because they really don't serve anyone well, most importantly, the children. When you have that kind of stigma attached to it, it really can do a lot of damage to the children, which is who we should be trying to protect and really create the best environment for their development, because the children really are, you know, our future citizens. They're what's building our society, and so it doesn't help us to create this negative story around them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you've always had this fascination with youth, with the youth. Where did that fascination come from?
Oh, that's a great question. And you know, I don't know, but I've always loved children and teenagers. You know, a lot of people, when they think of teenagers, they kind of think of all the negative things that they think of, the attitude, the sass, the talking back, and I love it. You know, very early on, I began volunteering with kids and teens, and I just love when they're really beginning to get a sense of themselves. And oftentimes when they are sort of fighting back, it's on this kind of quest to assert themselves and to figure out their independence, their autonomy. And I just think it's such a fascinating process, and there's so much opportunity there to really shape that development and help children and teens, you know, become their best selves, whatever that might look like for the individual.
Awesome. Guys, let me give you the call-in number if you want to get on the phone and chat with Dr. Cohen and myself, join the conversation about the strengths of single parenthood. The call-in number is 347-855-8229. Press the number 1, and that'll indicate to us that you want to come on air, and we'll bring you on if you've got a question or a comment, or you just want to say hey and hear yourself on the radio. Now, you bring up an interesting point, and that is so that when you say that children, you know, you're interested in children and the relationship that they have with their families and parents so that the child can develop into like their own little person. It's because the other day, this past weekend, I actually had I was a seminar leader at a women's forum. And after the forum, I had a parent come up to me, you know, and she brought her daughter up, and we were talking, and when I asked the daughter a question, mom would jump in. And I looked at mom, I was like, mom, you have to stop that. You kind of need to back up a bit. She's quite capable of doing it on her own, but you have to give her the chance, otherwise she'll never learn how to do that. She'll never learn how to answer and speak her own mind. And what I noticed is before the little girl even responded, sometimes she would look at her mom. Now, what is that an indication of, when she's always looking at the mom before she answers?
Yeah, so it sounds like a couple things could be going on there. On the one hand, we often have somebody who's our security base. So when we're in some kind of uncertain situation, we look to that person for guidance and support, and that can actually be an indicator for a really good emotional bond between two people. But on the other hand, what you're describing sounds a little bit more like this sort of psychological control where the daughter doesn't feel comfortable speaking for herself and asserting herself and isn't recognizing her own voice. And that's certainly a more negative experience. And you know, it reminded me, I was at the gym the other day, and the woman next to me in our exercise class started telling me how she had to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to help her kids prepare for school, and she had to make lunches, and she was helping with projects and all these things. And so I said to her, you know, how old are your children? And I'm thinking they must be fairly young that she has to provide them with this much assistance. And she tells me that they're 16 and 18 years old.
Wow.
Years old, children should be able to prepare their own lunches and to get the majority of their schoolwork done. You know, and it's one thing to provide some support and guidance, but it's another thing where the parents really not allowing the children and encouraging their children to, you know, to become responsible adults. And I think that that's such an important task of parenthood and a successful way to measure your parenting. That your children are able to do these things for themselves.
Now, as a parent who does that, and I'm not saying I do, but if I were a parent who did that, where I did everything for them, how would you get me to stop? I can't even phrase it in another way. How would do you get me to stop? Like, you're the professional. How would you get that parent to just stop that behavior?
Yeah, so that's always hard. Making any kind of change is really, really difficult. I'm going to give an example that anyone who has young children will remember. I can recall trying to change my daughter from sleeping from a crib into a big girl bed, and a bed without any railings. And the first night, she was out of bed, I kid you not, 83 times. I counted because it was just unbelievable. And the excuses were amazing. Mommy, I think my bed is too big. Mommy, I think my bed is too small. Mommy, I'm thirsty. Mommy, I have to go to the bathroom. Mommy, what are you doing? I'm lonely. Now what are you doing? Is it morning yet? I mean, it just went on and on and on. So I think that it's so important to recognize whenever you make a change, it takes a lot of work. I continually had to send her back to bed each time and to not engage in conversation. Sweetheart, I love you. Go back to bed. And I will tell you that the second night, she was only out of bed 4 times, you know, and compared that to the 80-something, that was a huge dramatic difference. And again, it still took some time to really get her to sleep in her bed and go to sleep on time. But I tell that story just as a reminder that changing behavior is hard. You have to commit to it. You have to recognize it's a process, and it's going to take some time and some effort. So if you have parents who are really kind of doing too much for their kids, understand that when you want to change that dynamic, it's going to be tough. You can do it, but it's going to take a lot of willpower. It's going to take commitment on everyone's part. And, you know, and there's going to be some struggle involved. And so, you know, usually it's best to start with a little change. So I wouldn't suggest to the parent to try to pull back on everything at once. That might be a little too tough for everyone. But if it start with something small and manageable, so if it's starting with, all right, from now on, kids, you're in charge of making your lunch each day. You know, so starting with one task and then rewarding when the task is done properly. And rewards don't have to be money. Rewards don't have to be purchasing clothes or toys or gadgets or anything. Rewards can be, you know, extra time together. Rewards can be, you know, that person gets to pick a TV show, you know, whatever it is that fits your child, you know, but rewarding the process along the way. So that way, you know, everyone does feel encouraged and positive about it and committed to it.
So it's not something you should spring on your kid one day. You should have a conversation about it beforehand.
Absolutely. Have a conversation about it. Also pick the time wisely. You know, so I wouldn't suggest making a change at the same time that your child's in the midst of some kind of high stakes testing at school, or at the same time that you're experiencing all the stress in your workplace. You know, so certainly be thoughtful and mindful in deciding as a family. You know, this is what we need to do. How can we best do this together?
Okay. Now, how do peers and family relationships impact the adjustment of children?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And parent relationships, first of all, I think it's important to recognize that it's a two-way street. So kids impact their parents, parents impact their kids. You know, it's a messy kind of relationship there. But parents can do a whole lot of really wonderful things for their kids. Certainly they can help their children to develop empathy, so how to recognize emotions in other people, how to treat others with kindness and respect, how to help one another, how to work hard, how to set goals, all these things. But of course there can be a negative aspect, you know, as well in the parent-child relationship. So if you have a parent who is very self-focused, then they can be modeling that for their child as well. Or if you have a parent who's not attuned to other people's needs, then you often see two children mirroring those kinds of behaviors as well. Oftentimes, our beliefs about parenting are going to impact the behaviors. And again, sometimes I can have the best of intentions, but that doesn't necessarily mean my actions match up. So I've worked with some parents who feel like it's very important to raise their children to be assertive and strong and independent. But what they end up doing is rewarding very aggressive and manipulative behaviors. And so their children are strong-willed, but they might actually be bullies. And so I think we need to sort of be careful there and every once in a while kind of step back and zoom out to take a look at, you know, what's happening in the family environment. And are we really, truly demonstrating for our kids the values, you know, that we aspire to?
Now, Doc, we've got a question coming through on Facebook, and someone wants to know, well, how do I do that? How do I know when I'm going overboard?
Mm-hmm. That's a hard one. And I would say that you have to constantly reassess, because what's appropriate to do for a 2-year-old is not going to be what's appropriate for an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old. So it is constantly reassessing. And one of the easier ways to go about that is to check in with other adults in your child's life. So children don't grow up in a bubble. They go to school with teachers or involved in activities, and they might have coaches. So check in with those other adults to see, you know, how your child is doing in those different environments. And so if you have a child who's really struggling in after-school activities to make, you know, relatively simple decisions. So, for example, let's say you have a child who's taking an art class, and the art teacher tells you that, you know, your child really has trouble, you know, even deciding what color paper to select and seems to constantly seek advice from the teacher on these sort of relatively simple tasks, then that might be a clue that, you know, maybe your child needs some help becoming more independent. So I would say one of the, you know, first things to do is to check in with other adults. And then to also, you know, pay attention to some very obvious things, like simply, you know, asking your child how they're doing, and then to listen. You know, it's really easy as parents to talk, but one of the best things we can do is listen. Sometimes those conversations can happen sitting down at the dinner table, and sometimes the best conversations happen in the car. Because especially when you're talking about sort of difficult topics, face-to-face is hard, right? It makes us feel anxious, and when we feel anxious, we kind of want to turn away and shield ourselves. So the car can be a great place for parents and kids to have some of these potentially, you know, sort of hard conversations, and to really sort of check in, you know, how are you doing? How's it going? And to ask about free time. You know, how do you like recess? You know, if you have a younger child who's in recess, you know, is your child able to make friends on their own? Are they able to find things to do, activities to engage in? If you have an older child, then asking about the lunchroom or what they're doing before and after school. You know, so all those things can be clues to let you know, whether your child's really happy and healthy and doing well.
Okay, and I'm thinking, as you say, to have a conversation in the car, the kid is also trapped. They can't go anywhere. Where are they going to go if the car is moving? You can't go. You got to now sit down and let's have this conversation. That's fantastic information, because some parents tend to think that kids are little adults, especially younger children. And I always have a problem when I hear that, because I'm like, absolutely not. They're not little adults. They don't think like adults. They don't reason like adults. They're children for a reason. They can't be little adults. That just doesn't work. You can't treat them like they're a little adult and expect them to behave in a certain manner, because they just don't know how. They don't have that cognitive ability to think along the lines of an adult.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, children can make some of the most profound statements, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have adult understanding for them. And so it is really important to continually sort of check in with your children. I have another sort of cute story that illustrates this point. There was a family where the parents had divorced when the child was fairly young. For most of the child's life, she had grown up in a household primarily with mom, and then spending some alternate time with dad. And the mom was in conversation one day with a neighbor and said something about being divorced. And the child said, "You're not divorced." And at this point, the child was like 7 or 8 years old, and the mom looked at it and said, "Honey, yes, I am. Your father and I have been divorced since you were 2. And the child said, "I didn't know that." And the mother was stunned because, again, the child had grown up in this household. She thought it was clear, but no one had actually ever used the words divorce before. They had never talked about it. She just assumed the child knew, and the child didn't. The child knew that mom had one house and dad had another, but that was sort of it. You know,
wow.
So it's really important to kind of check in because you never quite know how children hear a lot, they see a lot, but how they put that information together is often very different from adults. Very, very different. So we do need to check in.
That's funny. I was like, "What are you talking about? You guys are good."
Yep, the child had no idea.
That's interesting. That's a lot. Now, I want to know, and so do the listeners, they want to know, what are some of the strengths of single parenthood? And we're not talking about moms. We're talking about single parenthood, mom or dad, okay? Let's kind of get that clear. More and more dads are single parents now than before. But what are some strengths of this single parenthood? How do you get it done?
Yeah. So I think one of the major strengths is that as a single parent, you're the sole decision maker for the everyday kind of decision. So can I have an extra cookie? Can I stay up late? Can I watch this TV show? And when you have a two-parent household, those little tiny decisions can be sources of arguments and of stress, of conflict. Right, because maybe the child goes to one parent and that parent says, "No, no more cookies." So then the child goes to the other parent and the other parent says, "Yes." And they, you know, and children are pretty good at pitting one parent against another. So if you're a single parent, you don't have any of that. And so it can actually cut down on a lot of those daily stressors and things, which, again, they're pretty small. But, you know, we have that expression, the straw that, you know, breaks the camel's back. And so a lot of those what seem like, you know, very minor situations can actually be really upsetting to people when they're happening in the moment of each day. And so for a single parent, you make the decision and it's done and you move forward. And there is a lot of empowerment there.
Ooh.
So that can be a wonderful strength. The other thing is, and I think it's this is sort of a helpful way to think about it, when women first went back into the workforce, people started talking about latchkey kids and this idea of it would be so horrible, these children coming home and no one would be home for them. And what the research has shown us is that for some children, the better label is self-care kids, not latchkey kids, but self-care. And that these children are able to come home and learn how to take responsibility for themselves. They're able to figure out what's an appropriate snack, how do I get my homework done, but also have some fun so by the time my parent does come home, I've done what I'm supposed to do. And so they really learn how to take responsibility and become independent, which is, you know, again, a wonderful thing. And then the other thing we know is that a lot of children of single parents tend to develop really strong emotional skills, particularly when dealing with adults. So they tend to do about the same as their peers in terms of handling peer relationships. But parents of single children become really kind of sensitive and attuned to what's going on with adults. And so they oftentimes are a bit more sensitive in how they respond. So, "Hey, Dad, you know, you look really tired. Hey, Mom, do you want me to, you know, get you a glass of water?" So those kinds of things, which I think is, again, just a wonderful opportunity there. You know, and then your second question was sort of how do you make this happen, right? Yeah, and for that, I would tell everyone to keep in mind that it takes a village to raise children. This is not a new concept. If we think back, you know, 100,000 years ago, no one was raising a child on their own. That just doesn't make sense. You know, you'd have a saber-toothed tiger come and eat your young. We didn't do that. We depended on others. There is nothing wrong with depending on other people. Other people can add tremendous value to your life and your children's. And so I think it's extraordinarily important to reach out to others and to not see that as a sign of weakness. You don't have to go at it alone. So whether it be getting together with neighbors so your kids can play and you can have some grown-up time, whether it be taking turns babysitting with a neighbor so you can go do grocery shopping by yourself or go take a walk by yourself or, you know, whatever it is. And so, you know, reaching out and establishing these, you know, communities with other people that you can trust is really important. And it also shows your children, you know, how to work with others, the importance of cooperation, how we actually divide responsibility among others. So all kinds of really important values we can demonstrate, you know, when we lean on other people.
That's fantastic. Now, someone on Facebook is sending in a question, and it's directed at the first strength, you're the sole decision maker for everyday decisions. And this person wants to know, what if you don't know how to make those everyday decisions?
Yeah, so that can be tough, especially, you know, we started off by saying that people become single parents for a whole variety of ways. You know, and certainly if you were in some type of relationship where the other person was making a lot of decisions, then this can be scary. You know, like anything else, we start off with slow baby steps and we build upon it. You know, certainly the internet can be a wealth of information, some of it good, some of it not so good. But I would definitely encourage people. There's some great support groups out there, different blogs that can be helpful. I would recommend staying away from any that start to feel kind of competitive. And so when you start to have these, you know, sort of support groups online that really become one parent bragging and another parent bragging, yeah, stay away from those. They're not helpful. But there can be a lot where parents are really sharing their struggles, and that can be a great source of support as people also present ways that they've dealt effectively with different struggles. Also, certainly reach out to professionals. So, again, your children's teachers, coaches, pediatricians can be terrific sources of information. You know, all those different things, because I think when we gather information, it makes us feel more comfortable in then making a decision, right? So if we're trying to figure out, you know, well, really, how late can my child stay up? That's a question that's appropriate to ask the pediatrician, because bedtimes do change, you know, as kids change. If you have a question about, you know, is it really reasonable to expect my two-year-old to be sharing his toys? Again, that's a great question to ask a teacher at school if your child's in preschool. So reach out to others. I think that can be really helpful, first of all, again, in feeling supported in your decisions, but also having information so that you feel comfortable and confident in your decisions. And then the third thing I would say is it's also okay to change your mind, right? Sometimes we feel this pressure, like, oh, I have to make this decision and it has to be the right one. You don't have to get it perfect the first time around. It's okay. You know, and it's okay if your children know that you're not perfect, because they also then learn this wonderful lesson of how we fix things when we make mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, just as critical in life. Everybody, you know, does things that they then think, oh, you know, maybe I should have done something differently, said something differently. You know, we all have those moments. And so if that happens in family life, that's okay. Then you address it. Try something different and move on again. You know, it's really all the best any of us can kind of hope for.
Excellent. We've got another question. I don't know why they're being shy tonight and sending questions on Facebook, but someone wants to know, what's a good age for a child to walk to school independently, as you mentioned, the self-care kids?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I would say that there's a couple different aspects of that. First of all, you do want to check in, because different states and sometimes even cities or townships might have some regulations about when a child can be left on their own. So that is something that's really important to look into. However, there is a difference between a child coming home and watching themselves for an hour versus a child, you know, taking a short walk to school. Some of that is going to depend on the individual child, but typically you start to see that sort of around third grade-ish, but again, there's so many other things to take into account, you know, where you live, what kinds of traffic patterns there are, whether there's a lot of other adults around that you trust. So there's a lot of other variables to take into account there. And then ultimately, you know, where your own comfort zone is. And so, you know, perhaps in your neighborhood, it's really common for third graders to walk to school on their own, but you just don't feel right about that. Trust your intuition. You've got it for a reason. Trust it. And no harm will come if you wait another 6 months or another year. So, you know, sort of balance those things. You know, on the one hand, kind of look around, see what else is happening. But on the other hand, you know, always trust your intuition.
Absolutely. This one's funny. Is there a place to send kids for their teen years and return them when they're 21?
Send them to me. I love teenagers. And, you know, I'll tell you another quick story here, and maybe it'll be helpful to some of the listeners tonight. I can remember that I was teaching at a religious school. And so kids were coming to this school on the weekend when most of them would have rather been doing something else. They were all 12, 13, so just on the cusp of a whole lot of biological changes going on there. And then also this particular school attracted children of diverse special needs. So I ended up with a really diverse group of kids who didn't want to be there on the weekend. And they were all, you know, right on the cusp of puberty. So it was an interesting group. But one of the things that I was able to do with the kids is sort of say, okay, we're here. How can we make the best of this? You know, we've got this time together. I don't want to feel like I'm torturing you, and I hope that you don't want to torture me. So, you know, sort of how can we really make the most of this? And so we started to do a bunch of different things. One of the things that teenagers report, and I think this is so sad, when we ask teenagers in school what's the best way to get recognized, overwhelmingly they say you do something bad.
Wow.
So if you do something bad, if you misbehave, your name goes on the chalkboard or you get sent down to the principal's office. Everybody knows who you are. So this idea that we're recognizing all this negative behavior. And so one of the things I started to do with this class was we started recognizing positive behavior, where every time somebody would do something that was kind or compassionate, I would put their name on a little piece of paper and throw it into a box. And then at the end of the class, I would draw a name out, and that student would get a little prize. Mm-hmm. And part of what started to happen that I thought was really kind of amazing is and it was only by like the third or fourth week, so we hadn't been together very long. But I had one student who, it just happened randomly, I selected her name several times in a row, and so she came up to me at the beginning of class and said, you know, I've kind of won a lot, and I think it's time for somebody else, so, you know, can you just not put my name in the box anymore? Like, I'll still try to do really good stuff, but can you not put my name in it?
Yeah,
that's amazing. I thought, okay, maybe that's just, you know, one really sweet child. And then a couple of weeks went by and a couple other people won. And then they came to me and they said, you know, we've all won, but there's a bunch of people who have done really great stuff and they haven't won. So can you take our names out of the box? And so they started really looking out for one another. And so, you know, I think when we're talking about difficult, challenging children or teenagers, you know, one of the things we can think about is, are there ways that we can recognize the good things we're doing? Because oftentimes kids start to feel like they only get noticed for doing bad things, and so it actually encourages more of the bad behavior that we don't like, whereas instead if we were reinforcing and paying attention to the positive things, we might actually start to see more of that.
Why? That seems like it's something difficult for parents to do, is to recognize the good. Why is that? Why is it that if your kid is doing great at whatever they're doing, whether it's school or an activity or just doing their chores. Why is it difficult for us to recognize that and praise them for it?
Yeah, you know, I think some of it is just the busyness of life, where we get so caught up in doing everything, we don't necessarily stop to notice that, and instead we're kind of in crisis mode where we're only noticing the things that are off. But it is really important to try to sort of reset that kind of relationship and to really look for those positive things.
Absolutely, because it takes, to me, I'm here thinking about it, and I'm like, that it takes less energy to recognize the good that your teen or your pre-adolescent child is doing, then it takes less energy to recognize the good than it does when they do something, quote unquote, bad. And they're not really doing something
right.
bad. It's, you know, it takes less energy to recognize the good. So why wouldn't we want to do that? It takes so much, you expel so much energy when you're angry and upset and yelling and ranting and raving versus saying, hey, that was a great job. Let's go out to dinner tonight or whatever it is that, you know, your kid would enjoy. So I think we need to start recognizing that more. And yes, life gets in the way and we're busy, but this is your kid.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and I think it's also important when a child or a teen does do something that you don't like, you don't necessarily want to ignore it, because then the child doesn't necessarily know that what they're doing isn't, you know, the appropriate
right.
behavior. So you want to identify specifically what is the behavior. Why is it a problem? What would you want them to do instead? Because one of the things that the research shows us is that children who are doing things that they know it's the wrong thing, but they don't necessarily know what is the right thing. So if I'm a teen who's really frustrated and upset, and I know that if I slam my hands down on the desk or if I punch a hole in the wall, I know you're going to get angry at me, but I don't know what else to do when I'm this frustrated and upset. And so part of, you know, the thing that parents can do is to identify, you know, here's the behavior I don't like, here's why I don't like it, but here's some alternative behaviors you can do instead. And so you want to make sure that you add that extra piece of here's the way I want you to handle that situation.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I'm hearing is just a common thread out of everything, that all the great information that you're giving us, and that's conversation. And it's about having parents and their kids having a conversation about what's going on with them. As you said earlier, you know, you check in periodically. Do you have to be let's talk about helicopter parents for a second, but let me just finish my thought. You know, it's about just checking in with the kid, making sure, hey, everything's going okay, things not going okay, any concerns, any problems, we can talk about it and work it out. And it's about a conversation. That's the common word that keeps coming up, is have a conversation about it. Let's talk about it. Now, as I say, let's talk about it. What about these helicopter parents? What is going on with helicopter parents?
Yeah, so the media has made a huge deal over helicopter parents. But I will say that the research doesn't tell us that parents are really that out of control. There certainly are some who are over-involved. You know, like my example of the woman who was waking up at the crack of dawn to make lunch for her teenagers. You know, certainly we do have some of that. But we're not seeing it quite as much as the media would have us think. So I think that there's an important reminder there for parents that just because something's showing up in your Facebook feed, just because it's the hot story on on the show, doesn't necessarily mean that it reflects the all, you know, truth for everybody. But that being said, again, the question is really going to be, am I doing what's best for my child at this age and stage of their life? So, you know, what makes sense when you're parenting a 10-year-old is not the same thing as when you're parenting your 14-year-old, and certainly not the same thing as when you're parenting your 6-month-old. And so, you know, we want to adjust our expectations appropriately. can. I think that's
absolutely
really sort of
the best
way to avoid becoming a helicopter parent.
And you're not saying that you should not make a sandwich or lunch for your 16 and 18-year-old, right? You're not saying don't do it. You're just saying, like, they can do it themselves. If you happen to get up earlier than they do and you want to make a sandwich for them for lunch, that's okay. But to do it, to make yourself get up just to do that for them, you know, at 16 and 18, you actually need to be making my sandwiches and putting my lunch together.
Well, and that was where I was going to go. Absolutely. You know, part of it is why are you doing this? And so if it's about, you know, taking care of each other because we're all part of the family, then that's a beautiful message. It's one in where, hey, if mom wakes up early, she'll make lunch for everybody. But guess what? If the kid wakes up early, he's going to make lunch for everybody, you know, or dad
absolutely.
Or whoever. So if, you know, so if what we're really promoting here is that we all contribute to the family, then that's a wonderful thing. But if, you know, on the other hand, if the message is, well, a parent has to do this and the child has absolutely no responsibilities, then that's, you know, that's not a good message. Every child should have some responsibilities that are, again, appropriate to their age and stage. So for a young child, putting away their toys means teaching them responsibility. They know that their toys need to go back into the big box. That's good enough. As a child gets a bit older, you know, learning how to go to the bathroom in the bathroom is a sign
mm-hmm.
of responsibility. Being able to pick out their clothes, even if they don't match, but as long as they're weather appropriate, good enough. You know, so we want to adjust our expectations to what makes sense. You know, again, sort of promoting this idea that you can be independent while also caring for others.
I'm laughing because just I think it was about a week or two ago, I was having the same conversation with a friend of mine as far as kids picking out their own clothing. I said, it doesn't have to match, because we saw this little girl, she was out with her dad, and absolutely did not match. But it was cute because she was a kid. It was weather appropriate, and you're giving them some responsibility. They feel like a big person. They feel like
uh-huh.
a big kid, big girl. I'm a big girl. I can do it. And she had to be about 5 or 6. Cutest little thing, just didn't match. And I think we need to, as parents, allow the child some responsibility. Am I saying she should be ironing her clothes at 5 or 6? Absolutely not. But
right.
picking out her own clothing, as long as you said, it's weather appropriate, absolutely recommended. But again, I keep hearing the conversation. It's about talking to your kids. And you're not going to talk to a 2 or 3 year old the way you would talk to a 13 or 14 year old. But it's about having the conversation. Now, I know some parents, I've heard this being said, they do for their kids. They do everything for their kids because the child did not ask to be here. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think long-term that's really in the child's benefit, unfortunately. Again, mm-hmm. I think that's best intentions on the part of the parent, but I don't know that what they're really doing is going to be helpful long-term for the child, because what we know is that kids do well when they feel a sense of confidence, when they feel a sense of autonomy, when they feel a sense of accomplishment, and none of those things can happen when you have other people doing everything for you. You know, you see children feel this immense sense of pride. If you go to visit any kind of child care center, so a preschool, a kindergarten class, you'll see the children doing so many different tasks and feeling really proud of themselves. They love being
mm-hmm.
the line leader or the snack helper or
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, right? Teachers are great at coming up with, you know, somehow 20 different roles for all the children in their class. But it's this idea that everybody's part of the picture here. And, again, that's just so important in helping children to feel valued and to help them feel like they bring value to their family. So that's such an important piece. It's not just about one way that you show value to your children is by allowing them to feel valued, feel like they are contributing members of your family, again, and whatever makes sense for that specific child.
Wow. You know, I was just about to ask you to give parting words. You gave us such great information, And the top three, the strengths of single parenthood, is sole decision maker for everyday decisions that single parent is. Number two is the self-care kids. They're not referred to as latchkey kids. And it's teaching the child to take responsibility for themselves. And number three is develop strong, the kids, a strength of single parenthood is the child will develop strong emotional skills and they'll be sensitive and attuned to, you know, themselves and to the parent. Now, you just gave some great, great parting words. And I love the fact that you said, you know, it's about doing what's best for the child at the stage where they are. And we as parents have to realize that, yes, we all want the best for our children. We absolutely do. We want them to have better lives than we had. But you don't want to get to the point where you go overboard and it becomes, you take it so far to the extreme that it becomes error. So
yeah,
you
and
the
one parting
child,
word, you know, that I would say is that children are great at living in the moment. And so if you've been listening in and you're like, wow, I don't know, maybe this hasn't been going so right, I want to try this differently. Kids are really good at adapting. They're much better at it than adults are. It changes a lot harder for us than it is for them. You know, so if something's not working, try something different. You know, each day is a new one.
Absolutely. Kids can definitely teach us because too many of us adults, we don't live in the moment. We're not present to what's taking place here and now. We are thinking about so far in advance in the future, and we miss a lot when we're not present to the moment. That was beautifully said. I truly do appreciate you taking time out of your schedule and some time away from your own kids to be here and just help our listeners out and give them some tips and techniques and let them know, hey, you're not doing it wrong. Nobody's perfect. It's a trial and
absolutely
error. And I truly do appreciate it. Thank you so much, Dr. Allison, for coming on. We definitely need to have you back again and give us some
thank
more
you
tips
so much
on how to manage the relationship with teenagers, because I think that drove a lot of my that's driving a lot of my listeners a bit insane, and they just really are having a hard time with teenagers. So we need to have you back to discuss teenagers and how to deal with teenagers, because that's a special breed, adolescent.
Absolutely. I would love to do it. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed our time tonight, and I would love to call back another night.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and you take care.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, she was awesome, had tons of great, great information. And as I said, the one thing I kept getting out of it was to have a conversation with your kids. They're never too young or never too old. You just adjust your language to suit the age of the child, okay? But it's about talking to your kids and having the conversation. And Dr. Allison was so right when she said, you know, you want to do what's in the best interest of your child. Children live in the here and now moment, and they're very resilient. They can adapt to change more so than we can. And that's because we think too much. Like sometimes if we would have the mentality of a child, I guess, in certain areas of our lives, it would go a little bit smoother. Before we wrap up here, I do want to let you guys know that Ike to Hire part and full-time positions. It's a virtual position, so definitely get on and check out my Facebook page, our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/3BearItAll. If you are interested, you want to hear more about what we're looking for, please, please, please sign up, RSVP, be on the call. It's next Tuesday at 7 p.m., so that's April 26th at 7 p.m. Until we meet again next time, thank you all so very much for always tuning in and for your support. And you guys, as I always say, your choices determine your destiny. Have a great night, and God bless.